We're continuing to talk about, take you a piece of cake, or two, or three. We're continuing to talk about traditions and different kinds of holiday traditions. And a couple of days ago, I was listening to a CD that was in the car. Interestingly enough, it was named a Holiday Carol, C-R-O-L-E. It's Carol King. But as I was listening to one of the songs, I got thinking about our Jewish roots within the Judeo-Christian heritage and different Jewish festivals and traditions that are around. And a particular song came on that she and her daughter and her grandson were all singing portions of. And so I thought, well, oftentimes at the beginning of late November, the beginning of December, there's a particular celebration that takes place within Judaism. A lot of folks confuse it, think it's the Jewish form of Christmas. It's not. It has something to do with Al and his ancestors, the Maccabees. I tell you. Well, but those Maccabees back then, they did create some issues for Seleucid ruler Antiochus IV, Epiphanes, but they were doing so standing firm for God. In fact, there were folks in that time, after everything was over, after the Maccabean revolt, that actually thought Judas Maccabeus might be the earthly Messiah for whom they were waiting. The festival then is known as Hanukkah. That's right. The festival is known as Hanukkah, and it occurs. It is a very joyous festival. It's a commemorative festival. It occurs always between late November and late December. Interestingly enough. I think it's rather interesting. This year, does anyone care? Would anyone care to take a guess on what night Hanukkah begins? Christmas Eve, December the 24th. This year, Hanukkah is a festival that, as I said, it's a joyous celebration because it celebrates God's deliverance through Judas Maccabeus and his brothers and the Maccabean revolt. Time where Judaism was almost destroyed. In fact, in the month of Kislev in 165 B.C., which corresponds, Kislev, once again, there on the lunar calendar, corresponds to late November to late December. Forces under Judas Maccabeus recaptured Jerusalem, cleansed the temple, set up a festival of celebration known as the Feast of Lights, and it has been followed and observed ever since to remember God's gift of grace and God's provision. However, it wasn't initially such a happy time. Well, it was when they finally finished, but before that, no. There was a fellow by the name of Antiochus IV, Epiphanes. He was a Seleucid king. And I mean, he was descended from Seleucus the First. Decided, after Alexander the Great had conquered all the known world and then died, many of his generals and captains started fighting for control over different parts of his empire. Eventually, Seleucus gets a portion of that. He was one of the generals. And then it's passed down through some of his relatives and finally gets to Antiochus. Antiochus wanted to be known as the next Alexander the Great. And so he had headquarters up around Syria that he would make advances through Palestine or the land of Canaan, through Israel, trying to take over Egypt. He wanted to extend his reign that far. He would be in Egypt for a while and he would conquer the Ptolemies and push them back, and then something would happen back in his own headquarters. And he would start back, and the Ptolemies would be hot on his heels chasing him back, and then later he'd come back down. But eventually he gets defeated by them, and he comes to Israel and decides that he wants to create a new Hellenistic state there. We've mentioned him before in other venues where he took away the priestly garments from the Jewish priests and he made them wear garments of Greek priests. He started erecting statues to Zeus and demanding that they bow down to Zeus and worship Zeus and make sacrifices to Zeus. He started changing the Hebrew names of towns and cities and other things to Greek names. He was a very ruthless ruler. And at one point in time, when some of the Hasidic priests, the Hasidim today are the Orthodox Jews, very conservative, more conservative priests began to rebel against him and call upon God to destroy him, he performed an action, a two-part action, that really did not do much to endear him in the hearts of Jews. First of all, he went into Jerusalem and went into the temple and erected a statue of Zeus right near the altar. What's the other thing that we've said before that he did on that altar? He sacrificed a pig. Not just a pig, he sacrificed a pregnant sow on the altar in the most sacred spot in all of Israel, and thumbed his nose at God. When some of the priests and others began complaining and rebelling against it and threatening them, then he started having them hunted down and killed. People were crying at that time, every bit as much as they were crying out under the Romans when Jesus was born, "How long, O Lord? When will this stop? When will you come? When will you bring us Mashiach, or Messiah, which means the Lord's anointed?" And they were looking for, as we've talked about before, an earthly ruler, somebody who would rule and reign with a sword, who would sit on David's throne, who would get rid of their enemies, and then they would be able to reign. Now, in the book of 1 Maccabees, we find the story of what happens in the Maccabean Revolt and the establishment of Hanukkah.
Where are
they are in the Apocrypha. This is an older version of the Oxford Annotated that we used to use in classrooms with the Apocrypha. The Apocrypha is at the end. Actually, the Apocryphal books were written between the end of the writing of the Old Testament, beginning of the writing of the New. That's where they fall. And there are churches, Christian churches, that read from them most Sundays, especially a lot of high church traditions. There will be a reading from the Psalms, either a reading from the Old Testament or one of the books of the Apocrypha. Depending on the time of the year, it might be Maccabees, it might be the Wisdom of Solomon, it might be the Wisdom of Jesus ben Sirach, it might be from Tobit, any number of those books in there. They were written by a lot of different folks in that time period. And then in those high church traditions, then there will be always be a gospel reading, whether there's something else from the New Testament or not. The Apocrypha appeared when the King James was first printed. The Apocrypha was always printed with it. And around 1617 or 18, some Puritan publishers started leaving out the Apocrypha, though they left it in the table of contents. They didn't change that page, but they just left them out when they bound them. Eventually, the Archbishop of Canterbury said that while they are not on the same level as Holy Writ, they are important for study and understanding the times in between the Old Testament and the New Testament, what people were looking for when Jesus came. And he imposed a fine and or jail time to any publisher that left it out. So while it is not on the level of Scripture and it is not canon, those books do help us sometimes understand what was going on in that time period and what people were looking for and reading and hoping for.
Who really made that decision?
Which decision?
Not,
church councils that went along. As Protestant Reformation comes along, most of those are left out. As the church develops early, the Roman Church, the Orthodox Church, etc., they include those books because they do help to understand something of the times. Some of those books are very much like a book of Revelation, and you find that it wasn't just at the end of the Christian era, people, first Christian century, people were looking for that kind of stuff even before. There was a Jewish apocalypticism looking for it.
Is there a book in the apocrypha, Life Revelation, which is a vision rather than a history?
Esdras. Esdras would be along that line, 1st and 2nd Esdras. Supposedly written by Ezra, though they weren't. None of the books in the Apocrypha, they're all pseudonymous, a pen name, a false name. None of the books in the Apocrypha were written by the person whose name is on them or the author to whom they're often credited. They're written by other folks, but they are very popular literature. And the rabbis even encouraged some of it to be read. Especially 2 Peter, we're not sure whether it was probably a Petrine disciple that did that. But here, quite frankly, 1 Maccabees is pretty good historical writing. A few years ago, Al said, people keep talking about this thing. Do you have a copy? Sure. And so loaned him a copy. 1 Maccabees is pretty good historical writing. You get to 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Maccabees, the characters get bigger and larger than life, the stories become much more spurious. Another part of the reason 1 Maccabees would not be included in the canon within Judaism is because it would have fallen not under the last books, which aren't canonized until the end of the first Christian century. It would have fallen into the writings of the prophets, because there were early and late prophets. You know, Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings are all early prophets. We said they're books of history, but they were among the prophetic writings. And 1 Maccabees is very much like that and does deal with an historical period in Jewish history, world history, where Judaism was all but wiped out.
So if you were to check a course in Jewish history, they would include the
Apocrypha? Depends on where you are. Depends on who you're taking it from. But you would probably find if it was conservative Judaism that they would. Reform Judaism might. Conservative Judaism would probably be more likely to do that. Growing up, we didn't know too many Jews, but when I finally got older and started knowing some Jewish folks, and I was under the conception that because they celebrated in December, most of the time in December, they were celebrating Hanukkah. And I'm saying, whoa, that's just like Christmas. No, it's not. And yet, it does celebrate, in their eyes, deliverance of a different type from physical harm and almost extinction brought about by God. And we, at Christmas, celebrate the freedom and the activity of God and the redemption and salvation God gives in Jesus. Though Judas Maccabeus was nothing but a man. Jesus is the God-man. So, we get here, though, and in Hanukkah, what happens, Antiochus hears that there are pockets of resistance. And in this town called Modane, there was a group. Mattathias, who is the father of Judas, and Jonathan, and Eleazar, and others, he had five sons, refuses. He's one of those that's very outspoken, and he refuses to worship Zeus. He refuses to call Antiochus Epiphanes, which means God manifest. He leads the people the same way. Word gets back to Antiochus, and so he sends troops in to try and force the hand. They get there. He still refuses. They threaten the people of the town. Mattathias still refuses, and one of the townsmen says, well, if you won't do it, then I'll do it. And as he goes forward to present the sacrifice to Zeus, Mattathias picks up a weapon and kills him. And Judas and Jonathan and Eleazar and Simon, they all pick up weapons. And when it's all over with, most of the small group of troops that are there, are dead. Of course, one always escapes and go back and tell. And they decide, you know what? When Antiochus finds out, he's gonna come and kill us and kill anybody around here. We'll leave town and go into the mountains, and that way he'll have to come hunt us down there, and the town will be okay. Well, they were right on one account. Yes, he did send troops to kill them. They were wrong on the other, because when they didn't find them in the town, it was on the Sabbath. They didn't find them there in the town. They went ahead and slaughtered over 1,000 people in the town, some of them in the synagogue, because they knew they wouldn't fight. So they come back, and when they find out what's going on, Mattathias and his sons convince people God doesn't want you to start a fight on Sabbath, but don't stand by and be slaughtered either. You can defend yourself if it means your life. And so Mattathias dies a short time later, but Judas leads the revolt, and he is a very strong guerrilla fighter, earns the nickname Maccabeus, which means the hammer, so he's known as Judas the Hammer. And in 165 B.C., he finally recaptures Jerusalem. One little fortress, Acre, that he leaves some folks alone in there. Rather than lose more men, they agree to live under Jewish rule. But Antiochus is run back. He's defeated. He goes back to his headquarters in Syria, becomes ill and dies. Which, when the word came back, they said, I see, God was looking out for us. But more so in Judas Maccabeus. And we read in 1 Maccabees, 1 Maccabees 4, I'm looking for the specific reference here. It's 59, that's what I thought. I was reading over it, 39. After this happens, before that, he chose the blameless priests devoted to the law. They cleaned the sanctuary and removed the defiled stones to an unclean place. They deliberated what to do about the altar of burnt offering, which had been profaned. And they thought it best to tear it down, lest it bring reproach upon them, for the Gentiles had defiled it. So they tore down the altar and stored the stones in a convenient place on the temple hill until there should come a prophet to tell them what to do with them. Then they took new unhewn stones, as the law directs, and built a new altar like the former one. They also rebuilt the sanctuary and the interior of the temple and consecrated the courts. They made new holy vessels and brought the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the table into the temple. Then they burned incense on the altar and lighted the lamps on the lampstands, and these gave light in the temple. They placed the bread on the table and hung up the curtains. Thus they finished all the work they had undertaken. Then it goes on to talk about what happens on the 25th day of the ninth month, which is Kislev. And in verse 59, then Judas and his brothers and all the assembly of Israel determined that every year at that season the days of dedication of the altar should be observed with gladness and joy for 8 days, beginning with the 25th day in the month of Kislev. What happened, because the temple had now been cleansed, he and his brothers decided there should be a festival, a joyous festival of celebration, because now God had restored them, they were about to be wiped out. Within Jewish festivals, of course, candles, oil lamps are very important. And so, according to the legend, he determined that the oil lamps should be lit in the temple. And he declared an 8-day festival. Most Jewish festivals are 7 or 8 days. Well, his brothers and the priest come to him and say, well, we got a problem here. There's only enough olive oil to burn in the lamps for 1 day. And he said, well, light them anyway. And we're going to observe this festival for 8 days, for the Lord has provided. They lit them, and because the next shipment of oil for the lamps was not due for several days, and they called it the miracle of Hanukkah. For on 1 day's worth of oil, the lamps burned for 8 days. The new oil had come and had been delivered. Now, it's the festival or feast of lights. Feast or festival of lights. It is a joyous celebration.
You call this a legend?
It's part of their belief that this really happened.
So it's not a legend.
They would say, and I use the word legend simply because these are apocryphal books.
So this happened in
165
B.C.
It was initially it was oral, and then it was written down, and these books were passed along. But they were not canonized even within Judaism. The Jewish scribes did not canonize them.
So was it written in Arabic?
No, it was written in at that particular point in time, it would have been written in Aramaic, because that was the common language. Aramaic or Greek, it would not have been written in Hebrew. And so during this time then, they remember when God did this. Now, a special menorah is used. And by the way, menorah is just candelabra. Menorah simply means lampstand or candelabra. But a special menorah is used with 9 oil lamps or 9 candles. Typical menorah has 7. This festival is 8 days, and so that's to take place. The 9th one is to light all the others. And on the first night of the festival, they light 1. On the second night, they light 2. On the third night, they light 1, 2, 3 until it's all coming in from the sides, until it's all done. There are special passages and psalms that are sung and read concerning Hanukkah to remind them of God's grace, to remind them of God's provision, to remind them of God's goodness. Sometimes it is almost like a Thanksgiving festival when it falls in late November. People kind of look at it that way, but it is. I mean, it's not like our turkey and dressing Thanksgiving thing, but it is a festival of Thanksgiving for God's provision. I don't know, you may or may not have Jewish friends. And right. Right.
And people pray in Jesus' name. She doesn't believe Jesus is the Savior.
Right.
So that's offensive to her. She says, we're going to have public prayers. I wish they would just say amen and not in Jesus' name. Because we all worship the same God. But she said, it just assumes that everybody in the crowd is Christian. And so, I mean, I just had a different perspective from her. Not that I agree with her.
Right.
But to hear it from the Jewish point of view has been interesting to me.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And some within Judaism celebrate Hanukkah as a major festival, but some it's more minor. Part of those who especially celebrate it as a major festival, remembering this time and remembering that God continues to provide, even at a time they were almost wiped out completely. They try to make sure that they pass it on to their children because they want the children to know the stories, and they want the children to know that God does provide and to have that faith that God continues to provide for them. I mean, if you really think about it, in the history of the world, especially the Middle East and the Western world, some Native American tribes might disagree, but you're hard-pressed to find a people that has been more persecuted and more lambasted and more attempts to exterminate them than Jews.
And historically had a bad rap, even back in
Shakespeare. Right. Right. Shylock. Yeah. And so, but on each of those nights, they light the menorah. There are special songs. There are special stories that are used. There are games that are played with the parents sit down with the children and they play games. And some, I know in some cases early on, there will be everyone looks and they try to find, because they give them gifts and charity. One during Hanukkah, one gives charity more than they do at other times of the year. But they give them gifts. And they'll play with dreidels. A dreidel is a top, a little spinning top. It's got 4 sides to it. And on each of the sides is a Hebrew character that reminds them of what God has done. And, they spin them. They play games with the dreidels, but there will be a special dreidel that the children search for, to try and find. What's really interesting is during certain times in world history in Europe, when there were actually attempts to keep Jews from becoming formally educated in the Torah. Children, when they would be hiding, and this happened under the Greeks too later, the Romans later on. But children, they'd be in caves or they'd be somewhere studying that they weren't supposed to, but they had their dreidels with them. So this dreidel goes way back, they have it with them. And if somebody said the soldiers were coming in, well, they would cover up what they were reading and they'd start spinning their dreidels and playing their games so that they thought they were. And as soon as they left, they picked the dreidels up and would start. And they thought the dreidel was also part of God's provision for them when they weren't supposed to be doing these things. Foods that are associated with Elvis would have liked it, because most of the meals consist of foods that are fried in oil. So yeah, Elvis would have liked it. But pancakes, potato cakes. Jewish people, right. So Hanukkah would be, Hanukkah to Christmas for Jews would be similar to the Passover to Easter kind of thing.
We have nothing against the Passover and Hanukkah as Christians. That's part of our Judeo-Christian
heritage. It is. We just don't hear about it much.
Yeah,
that's why we do Passover.
It.
No. Right. One of the primary foods that is potato pancakes cooked in oil, olive oil, is one of the primary foods. They also, for the children though, they make special jelly donuts, and of course they're fried in the oil as well, that kind of thing. But but the oil and the cooking of these foods in the oil draws them back to God's provision during that time when the oil lamps burned, and they shouldn't have. And yet God brought light into a time of great darkness. In fact, the four letters on the on each side of the dreidel stand for a phrase that reminds them of a great miracle of God happened here. It would be God's provision, etc. They don't have Hanukkah trees and all that kind of stuff, and the lights are not like our Christmas lights. They're candles. And actually, Hanukkah is supposed to be a lot of festivals. Passover, when Passover is celebrated, Passover is celebrated in the privacy of the home. You don't invite guests in. It's a family celebration. However, according to the law, there have to be at least 10 in the household to properly celebrate Passover. And the Old Testament does state that if a household does not have enough, then a man and his neighbor can go together. But only the two families can go together, so that there's at least 10 people in the room celebrating Passover. For Hanukkah, the menorah, the first night, the menorah is supposed to be lit either in an open window or an open doorway, so that the world can see and be reminded of the great miracle that was done in the open during that time. So it's not the Jewish Christmas, and I have folks over the years, and I've asked students, well, anybody tell me, especially in world religions, okay, we're coming up, anybody tell me, what's Hanukkah? Oh, that's Jews' Christmas. That's when the Jews celebrate Christmas. No. No, in fact, I know that Noel doesn't mean this, but I've said for a number of years, Noel would be a very appropriate phrase within Judaism, because El means God, and for them at Christmas there's no El, not God in the flesh in Jesus. But yes,
By the Jewish tradition that Jesus was not Messiah, but he was the prophet.
Right. Between
the Jewish people celebrating Passover,
right?
But they don't believe that Jesus was the Messiah,
right? Well, for them, it's just Jesus celebrated Passover. And that Last Supper was a Passover meal, unless you're looking at the Gospel of John and it was before Passover. But if you look at the other three, it's a Passover meal. And they would have seen Jesus as at that time as celebrating as a Jew. And in fact, within Judaism, as it developed, the problem wasn't with Jesus or a whole lot of what Jesus taught, except when he started later, not early on. Later, when he started making references to himself as Son of Man and those kinds of things. The bigger issue was from his followers who said he was Son of God, or God in the flesh. And for them, you know, their Judaism and Islam are radically monotheistic, although Islam is much more radically monotheistic even than Judaism. And so, you know, God would never, in either of those, God would never degrade himself by becoming human. God would speak through humans. God would have special connections with certain humans who would then be the prophets, but God would never demean himself to do so. In fact, they would say God could not. Which I then guess then gets you, well, can God create a rock so big God can't pick it up? You know, those kinds of arguments. But they would see that where the bigger splits came about was when those followers in the early church kept preaching Jesus as Messiah, and that they had rejected Messiah and that kind of thing, and that's where the friction really picked up. And then when Paul gets converted, he just pours gas on the fire with what he does. But if you have Jewish friends and at this time of the year you hear them talking about, for a number of years now, you go, whether it's in the Hallmark store, well, you don't even have to go in a Hallmark store. You can go in the Ingles grocery store, I guess in the Wally World too, and walk over to the card section. And about this time of the year, you won't just find Christmas cards, you'll find Hanukkah cards. Early in Paul's, from what we gather, early after Paul's conversion and some of his early missionary journeys, he would go to the synagogue and he would worship in the synagogue regardless of what time of the year it was. He would participate in synagogue worship and then he would begin his preaching either nearby or sometimes if he was there worshiping in the synagogue and someone noticed, oh, we've got someone who seems to be learned here. They didn't know who he was for sure, but you know, it was his right as a Hebrew male to be invited to read Scripture and make comment on it. And
why are you so bad about us celebrating those things? I don't see any wrong.
Well, there are a lot of folks who do Feast of Weeks or Sukkot or Feast of Booths. Feast of Booths or Sukkot recently was recently was celebrated by several churches around here. Church of God, Church of God of Prophecy, Emmanuel, Foursquare Gospel, all celebrate those. There are denominations, Christian denominations, that also celebrate the Jewish holidays. They're the full gospel fellowship. Excuse me. But there are some Foursquare Gospel, it's all nice and neat, and the four gospel writers, it's all one package, and these are the things, and that's it, just the basics of the gospel. No expansion on them, those kinds of things.
What I was trying to make clear in my own head is that if we set up other celebrations like Christmas and Easter, which are not biblical, but the Hanukkah and the Passover are...
Well, that depends on... Right. Passover is biblical. Hanukkah is only biblical if you accept those books as part of your canon. Because they're in the Apocrypha. And the Apocrypha... not in the Bible that most folks use, and they're not in the Bible. They're not officially recognized, even within Judaism, as canon. There are only 39 books in Judaism accepted as canon, and those are the 39 we've got in the Old Testament.
But Jesus,
these are extra-canonical.
If Jesus actually felt the need to have Passover at the Lord's Supper,
No, Passover was part of his heritage, and he came to the Jews first, and he also recognized it's the same God that called the Jews, and the Jews were supposed to lead other people to God who has come in him now in order to build upon. Christianity, or the way, was supposed to really help. It's the flower or the finished product of the root of Judaism. It's the full blossom. That, so Jesus celebrates Passover because he's Jewish.
So when you think about the blood being shed,
right,
that is paramount in our faith. Without the blood, there's nothing. So when you think about the shedding of a lamb at the Passover and the blood over the door, well, when
right.
we think about our own faith and our own religion, the blood is important.
Well, the blood is important. And
I know it's his
yeah, blood. But within yes. But within Judaism and within Jesus' own teaching there at that Passover meal, what he was doing and what he was giving supersedes and makes the Passover, the Paschal Lamb, irrelevant now. Because he is the perfect Passover Lamb. He's the perfect sacrifice. Therefore, the other sacrifices don't need to go on. But within Judaism, they do go on because they haven't found Messiah yet. Now, Hanukkah, as such, while it commemorates that, it was not celebrated as widely in Jesus' or even Paul's day as it is now. It was remembered, but it wasn't a big celebration like it is now.
Well, the early Christians did not have Christmas trees nor Easter.
No, in fact, the earliest Christians didn't celebrate the birth until 2 to 3 centuries later, because what was important was the crucifixion and resurrection. That was the important thing. That was the focal point. Without that crucifixion and resurrection, it was just another sect of Judaism. But it's the crucifixion and resurrection that then makes it...
Seems like it should still be that way to
okay.
me.
Praise
well,
God.
Yes, sir.
Seems like we put way too much on Christmas and not near enough on
Easter. We do. Mm-hmm. We do. Well, and Christmas has been co-opted. If we do, then we've got... That's right.
No,
that's part of our heritage.
I don't mean to wipe it out in the sense that, you literally can't do that because it's there. But I'm talking about when it comes to our faith, I think Paul and Rome at one time said that you can't do that. We don't need Judaism. We don't need the law anymore.
What he said was, the law is no longer the means by which we are saved.
Absolutely.
He never said we don't keep the law. The law still had a purpose. Right. And Jesus said, yes. And actually what it means there to fulfill means to express the full significance. He wasn't just coming and saying, well, I'm the fulfillment of the law. He was saying, and the particular word that is used there in the Greek text and the context, when he says, I've come not to abolish the law and the prophets, I have come to fulfill them, it means to fill out fully what they mean. And then he jumps into that and says, for example, you've heard it said to the men of old, you shall not kill. But I say to you, that's the letter of the law, and you still don't. But he said, I say to you, the heart of the law is the matter, this intention.
It's harder to witness to Jewish people than anybody else because their heritage and honoring their mother and father and honoring their religious background precludes them from understanding Jesus the way a non-believer who's never been indoctrinated to a religion does.
Right.
I mean, I know my friend, she asks me a lot, we talk a lot, and she says, but for me to honor my heritage and my parents, to go that route is to defy them and what I've been taught and what I've learned and what we do in my home.
Yeah.
And so I understand what a deep conflict that must be for her.
Oh, it is because they're. I mean, the constantly throughout the Hebrew scriptures, but especially in the Torah, in place after place after place, talk about this in the marketplace. Talk about it in your home. Teach it to your children and your children's children and your children's children's children. Even when they crossed the Jordan River to go into the land of Canaan. Have one man from each tribe pick up one stone and build a monument here so that when your children and your children's children ask you, what do these stones mean? Then you can tell them about God parting the waters so that you can start a new life and providing for you. And so all of that, that is. I mean, it's, and what's really interesting in Judaism, as it developed, very much like some of the Far Eastern religions, as a Middle Eastern or an Oriental religion. It's sometimes referred to as Oriental, though it's a Middle Orient. Respect and commitment to the elders and the care of the elders is paramount. It's next to, you worship God first, but then you take care of them. And you provide for them, and you tell the stories, and you don't dishonor them. And in fact, in some of those traditions, when you reach a certain age, some of the Oriental traditions, when you reach a certain age, if you want to, and sometimes in Hinduism, it's when your first grandson's born. But if you want to, regardless of that age, you can quit work. It's now up to them to take care of you for the rest of your life and provide for you, and you can do whatever else you want to, because you are that parent and that grandparent, and you're the one who helped to give them life, and you're the one who has the wisdom and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. But yes. So, you know, I don't think that, and I think, Ariel, to look at and to understand some of those Jewish religious celebrations, especially the ones that are foundational for Christianity, that's important. At the same time, I also think we need to be careful that we don't get caught up in some of what goes on there to the point that we begin to question whether Jesus really is who he said he is or not. And,
well, you know, the Jews always say that Christ is a Jew. You can't change that. And that's true. But I think when we have the new covenant that Paul set up, that changes.
Oh, and yet it wasn't Paul that set it up, it was Jesus. Paul built on it, but...
The revelation was Jesus, but when he changed the covenant, made a new covenant, that is new. It's not old. And so the Jews, if they were accepting what Paul had set up for them as a new covenant, they wouldn't need the temple. They wouldn't even need the sacrifice that they're still pursuing.
Well, and when it comes to, and I guess in some ways they still do, but when it comes to Passover, they don't go out and slaughter the lambs. They go to the kosher deli and buy their leg of lamb for their celebration. Now, yes, they've been slaughtered, but at a slaughterhouse, not in a temple. So even there's some differences. But like I said, I... The temple is within you, and the Spirit is within you and all around you, and those kinds of things. You know. So,
because we live in America, and because America is, you know, proud of its tolerance of all religions, mm-hmm. every religious persecution, I mean, you can practice whatever religion you want to practice, and we are Americans.
No, I mean, we do have that. Any religion or no religion.
In school, a lot of people say, well, that's good if your teacher's a Christian. But I have been in classrooms where the teacher was not a, I mean, I wasn't being taught by it. I was visiting
right.
and doing work in the school where the teacher was not a Christian. Do I want that person leading prayer in that classroom? If that person is an atheist or Wiccan, we have a large Wiccan fellowship here in Greenville.
Right.
With numbers over 1,000. Do I want a witch praying with my children? So, you know, it begs a lot of questions
right.
that we don't always think about. And it's hard for Christians
sometimes. It is, and you know, and we you know, we do have that constitution. You know, constitution says that, and there's not to be a religious test for office and all those kinds of things, and that's tough.
Israel, trying to say, you're a Jew. are they necessarily a Jew? Whether it's ethnic or religious, are you saying an ethic?
Well, no, they're saying that, like, there's Jewish tribes in Ethiopia. Well, and they're bringing them to Israel.
The Coptic, well, and that depends on somebody's tracing of lineage and heritage of the religion, et cetera, because Coptic Christians claim that, that they go back way, way to the beginning, and that John Mark actually is the patron saint of the Coptic Christians.
But does that make it authentic?
That he's supposedly the author of the Gospel of Mark, and Peter's scribe, and he went to Egypt and began a Christian church, began evangelizing a Christian church. So, there are Coptic Christians who claim that their tradition goes all the way back to the first century.
But these are not Christians.
No.
They're Jews. Ethiopian.
The Ethiopian Jews. But the question is, are we talking ethnicity or are we talking religions? Because Sammy Davis Jr. was a proselyte to Judaism. And supposedly, go talk to Mitt a little bit, and he can probably tell you about the lost tribes that made it over here, and the Danahites and others, and that's why Jesus came over here. And the Book of Mormon later shows up and talks about it. You had a Mormon say that the Book of Mormon, it's a second testament of Jesus, because he had to, when he ascended in Israel, he had to come over here and seek out those lost tribes that had come over by boat. And we're over here. So, I don't think so, but once again.
I think for me, in my Christian journey, I'm very grateful that I was raised in a Christian home,
with
Christian parents, because I think it is a struggle for people born outside that tradition to accept Christ, unless they're totally non-believers and they've never been taught anything. Then they can come to Christ. Those that have been raised, like you're talking about, or like in a Jewish home, or in a Coptic Christian home, or in a Muslim home, it's very hard to explain to them the mystery of Christ.
In other words, you say it's easier to bring somebody to Christ than what it is to convert somebody to Christianity.
There you go.
Yes.
Bring someone to Christ rather than convert them to Christianity.
And
you
so.
You have to be careful because you don't want to turn them off.
Oh, no.
No.
And these days, you never know. But thank y'all. I don't have any dreidels to pass out. But
do you have a menorah?
I do not have a menorah.